Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. My, it's been a tempestuous week, hasn't it? And that's only what you've heard about in the media, which, of course, is consumed by the election, the primaries, the supposed contested convention, Sanders and Clinton, a little tiny drab of Clinton's emails, you know, major national security breach, but we don't need to cover that too much. And, you know, Hillary Clinton's gaffes, as in, we didn't lose a single person in Libya. Let's see. I think, if I look at the map, Benghazi is in Libya. And last time I checked, we lost an ambassador, another State Department official, that poor guy, Sean, the communications guy, and two former Navy SEALs in the CIA Protection Detachment. No, we didn't lose anybody. I mean, is there anything else that would point to how little Hillary cares about Benghazi? I mean, we didn't lose anybody. Why, Hillary? Because we were supposed to lose them. Therefore, they're not a loss. I wonder. Anyway, this show is going to be about, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the county convention here, the county convention and caucus in Wyoming last Saturday, which was right after my broadcast of last Saturday's show, which I hope you enjoyed. And it was very, really interesting. And for those of you who are not in a caucus state, I think you'll find it very instructional and insightful. And I will tell you that I was elected to be an alternate delegate, and we'll get into that whole little story, and I'll keep it brief, to the state convention, which is April 16th. So we'll see what happens there. In any event, I'm also going to bring to your attention what the press doesn't seem to be talking about at all, and that is this these increasing debt bubbles. And I'm just going to focus on a couple of them, three of them to be exact. Automobiles, student loans, and energy. Because any one of those is enough to cause a major disruption in this economy and financial markets. All three of them together, never mind $9 trillion in corporate debt and debt to emerging countries, all denominated in dollars, and all sorts of other stuff. We're not going to even go there. Never mind the $19 trillion, soon to be $20 trillion, in primary national debt, or the $120 to $200, depending upon who you talk to, trillion in unfunded liabilities, Social Security, Medicare, and pensions. And by the way, I brought this up about 2 months ago, folks. You folks who are in the, either you're getting Social Security now, or you are close to getting Social Security. In other words, you're going to be 62 prior to April 30th. You need to get on the stick. Because in the omnibus budget bill, which I discussed in some detail in last week's show, listen to it if you haven't listened to it, it'll make your eyes curl, make your hair curl, make your eyes cross. Social Security has had like $11 billion stripped out of it. And that is likely, in one way, shape, or form, money out of your pocket. And by the way, they're not done. I guarantee you that in 2017, with 4 years to go to the next presidential election, that just about any presidential candidate, other than perhaps Trump, who has promised not to touch Social Security, that any presidential candidate is going to preside over a further stripping of Social Security benefits, not necessarily by decreasing benefits, but by increasing the deduction from your benefit for Medicare. It's six of one, half dozen of the other to you folks. You know what? Because it's less dollars in your pocket. But the changes, which are going to be mandatory as of April 30, could cost you money. I don't know if what you know about spousal benefits. I don't know what you know about divorced spousal benefits. I don't know what you know about family benefits. But you definitely... Oh, and then the election... Thank you for reminding me, Miss Producer. And then the election, by the way, the kind of six simple words. You know, there's a bunch of, you've probably been getting emails in your inbox. I mean, there's people selling all sorts of crap and all sorts of pamphlets and books. And I will admit that I did buy a book, which was really quite good, although now outdated because of the new omnibus law, which is Get What's Yours. So that I could talk intelligently on this radio show to everybody. But let me tell you that if there are things that you can do between now and April 30, if you are going to turn 62 or you're 62 or older, whether or not you are currently getting Social Security, that may stand you in good stead and may mean a difference to you of $10, $30, $50, $100,000. Over the life of your Social Security benefits, which you have paid in for all your life. And it is worth your while to check those out. Remember those words, spousal benefits, divorce spousal benefits, family benefits or family benefit limitations, and when you elect your payment, you make what's called a restricted application. Remember that word, restricted application. I'm not going to spend the show telling you what all these things are. Much of my audience is not in the Social Security age, although many are. But I'm throwing out five or six catchwords, which are kind of the nexus, the crux of what Congress, without telling you, in the middle of the night, December 15th, 2015, changed. And they could affect you big time. And you need to look into it. You can Google some of those terms up. And there's, you know, a raft of stuff out on the web. You can spend $39 or $69 or whatever they're charging for a book or pamphlets or whatever, and I really suggest you do if you happen to be in that bracket, 62 or older, or turning 62 prior to April 30th. Because as of April 30th, some of those goodies go away. Sorry for the digression, but very important, and time is short. The other thing we're going to be talking about today is we're going to be talking about gun confiscation. If you go back to when Obama passed his executive order concerning guns, totally illegal, totally unconstitutional. This humble reporter told you this is just the tip of the iceberg. That when he stands up there with his big brown eyes and lies to us right into the camera face, I'm a firm believer in the Second Amendment and I'm not coming for your guns and this is all nonsense, Republican nonsense, and this is the paranoia of the bitter clingers to their guns and religion. He lied. Now, that's not a big surprise, is it? Because that's what he does. He lies. And you will find that there's been about 100,000 vets who have been stripped of their firearms. I'm talking about at sometimes a gunpoint by police. And they are now implementing a program. And this goes right into the Social Security thing I was talking about. They are now implementing a program to ensnare Social Security benefit recipients using a loophole that they have contrived in a law to confiscate your weapons. You definitely want to listen to this because you can, so far, easily avoid it. And then we're going to talk a little bit about yet another money-sucking drain of the left, and that is this climate accord. I mention it in the last couple of shows that completely illegally, basically executing a treaty without Senate authority, contrary to the Constitution, implementing the treaty without Senate authority, contrary to the Constitution, and then actually transferring our money according to an illegal treaty that's unconstitutional to the United Nations, supposedly for climate control. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that today, too. And then I'm going to wind up the show. No, I'm not going to be talking about the Islamic terror financing. That show is still to come. I do not have enough time today, and these subjects need to be covered, Miss Producer, but thank you for the reminder. And I will promise you folks that I am going to do that, and that show will be a corker. I'm sure it will make some national syndications. And then I'm going to read you a few more paragraphs from that terrific article in American Thinker that I've read several excerpts from in various shows over the last several months. And the paragraphs I'm going to read you are really apropos to what's going on in the Republican primaries. I mean, like, right on. And this article was written back in January, prior to the current brouhaha, shall we call it. All right. Oh, and one last thing is, when I'm done telling you about these debt poison pills, and boy, the numbers are shocking. I mean, they will flat shock you. No matter what a gloom doom person you are on the financial decay of the United States, these numbers will shock you, I guarantee it. I'm going to tell you about a country that was kind of in this predicament, oh, give or take 10, 12 years ago, and where they're at now. And it's not Greece, and it's not Moldania. It's a big country. It's kind of a foreshadowing of what we have to look forward to if we don't get our caca together. And part of that is electing the right president. And hopefully retaining control, conservative control, if that really exists, of the House and the Senate, and getting Supreme Court justices nominated. Speaking of which, and this is going to launch into the show, so Obama nominated his guy, and the guy is supposedly a moderate, you know, centrist, you know, the left is using all these fuzzy warm terms that they're great at concocting out of their butts to make you feel good about something that's really bad for you. And in some aspects, he is a quote-unquote moderate jurist. However, this gentleman is 63 years old. He's Harvard educated. he was appointed by Bill Clinton to the Court of Appeals, and he has voted against that critical aspect of the Second Amendment embodied in the Heller case, which was championed by Scalia, which interprets the Constitution correctly as the founders intended, the originalist interpretation, which is the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right of each American. Remember that the left likes to say that it was meant only for the military because the words militia are in the Constitution. The right to keep and bear arms by a well-armed militia, blah, blah, blah. That is the crux of the argument over whether you, Sally Lou, and John Smith can own firearms under the Second Amendment. That's the crux of it. This gentleman that the left is now telling us is centrist and moderate and reasonable has twice voted in the appeals court that that clause of the Constitution means individuals do not have the right to keep and bear arms. In addition, at the time he was meeting with Obama in the White House, guess who was photographed going into the White House? and I'm sure she wasn't going in there for tea and crumpets. I'm quite sure she was in the meeting. Who knows who else attended that meeting that we don't know about? That's the head of Planned Parenthood. And as you know, there are several abortion-related cases coming up. And I am not here, once again, you know, you're not going to get me ensnared in pro or con abortion. I have my own thoughts on it. I abhor abortion. But I abhor saddling a woman with no alternative under certain occasions, certain circumstances. But late-term abortion under any circumstances, no, no, no. And partial birth abortion so that they can harvest body parts to sell, no, no, no. I mean, that is just plain flat disgusting. Anyway, there are no coincidences, folks. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had hung around all the entrances of the White House the day that this gentleman was not, the day that Obama talked to this gentleman, the day before he announced the nomination in the Rose Garden. I would not be surprised to have seen some of the people from the Brady anti-gun group or some of the other anti-gun groups coming in, some other people coming in from organized labor. Nobody has to go in or out of the White House on the immigration thing because taxpayer-funded advisor in the White House to Barry on immigration matters is the former head of La Raza, which believes in totally open borders and believes that California, Nevada, New Mexico, and Texas should go back to Mexico because we stole it. So I'm sure she was in on the meeting too, and, you know, she was already there for her day of work on behalf of the American people. So you need to write your senators. You know, congressmen have nothing to do with this. You need to write your senators from whatever state you're in listening to this, and you need to tell them, kind of like that scene out of The Gladiator, you know, with the heathens coming up the hill, the Roman lines in the forest, fireballs flying overhead from the catapults, and Aurelius on his magnificent horse, sword drawn, battle armor on, up and down his phalanx of Roman soldiers saying, "Hold the line, hold the line." Do you remember that opening to that movie? Unbelievable. That's what you need to tell your senators. Hold the line. Do not confirm any nomination of Barack Obama. It is a Trojan horse. And if this guy is liberal in these two key critical areas, I flat guarantee you that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because Barack Obama is not going to be nominating anybody to the Supreme Court who is not as left, as Islamist sympathizing, or as radical at heart as he is, no matter what the veneer of previous rulings. I flat guarantee you that. Barack Obama is not going to blow the chance to affect the outcome of decisions on this court for decades by putting in a quote-unquote moderate. Uh-uh. And our Republican senators, not all of them, but most of them, I don't trust to hold the line unless we exert lots of pressure. And by the way, that brings me into the next part of this show, which is gun confiscation. Because some of the cases here that have occurred under illegal gun confiscation, both of weapons owned by veterans and now weapons owned by Social Security beneficiaries, are going to go to the Supreme Court. And I don't think you want this guy deciding whether you're right or you're wrong. No, no, no. So let me tell you a little bit about this, because you haven't heard much about it. So at the VA, there's a law which says if you're adjudged mentally incompetent, or you are committed for treatment, etc., for mental instability, you may not own firearms. They can come take your firearms. You can't get a firearm, etc., etc. And you know, I'm not sure I disagree with that. I mean, if you are mentally incompetent, mentally infirm, mentally unbalanced, you know, I think your right to keep and bear arms is probably superseded by everybody else's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, there's always a balancing act. However, the sly left and the lawyers in the White House and the Department of Justice, thank you, Loretta Lynch, who can't seem to indict Hillary, and Barry Obama and his crew have come up with a loophole. And they tried it through the VA to begin with. And they were successful in stripping about 100,000 vets so far of firearms. And it has nothing to do with mental incompetence. Or shall we say, in reality, it has nothing to do with mental incompetence. In the way they spin things, it has everything to do with mental incompetence. This is how they are getting around their own law. The left passed the mental incompetence law. And the way they've been doing it is this. If you need any type of financial assistance, even down to having a family member deposit your VA checks or deposit your Social Security checks, then guess what? You're incompetent. You are mentally incompetent because you can't handle your own finances. Never mind that you might live, you know, 50 miles from the nearest bank. Never mind that your daughter lives in town, so it's a hell of a lot easier for the check to be sent to her so she can deposit in the bank and you don't have to drive in to do it. Never mind all that. Never mind that maybe you have a bookkeeper who takes care of all your bills. You don't write checks. I know people like that. I myself can't balance a checkbook. Never have, never will, don't want to. There's folks who do that for me. Am I mentally incompetent? I don't think so. So, the left has expanded this loophole, and now they've instructed the VA and the Social Security Administration, beware, folks, you're getting forewarning here. At some point in the interview process, or at some point when you get your checks, they're going to say, is there anybody that you would rather have get this check? Is there anybody who is assisting you with your finances? Is there any account other than your own you want this place because somebody pays your bills? Who knows what form the question may take? But if you answer affirmatively, if you do not have that check mailed to your house, if you do not have it electronically deposited into only your own account, for whatever reason, even though it may be a absolutely perfect logistical and business reason, they can, and they will, judge you to be mentally infirm because you can't handle your finances. And the next thing you know, you will have police at your door taking your guns. You think I'm kidding? I wish I was, but it is the truth. I'm going to give you, where's my notes here? Yeah, here's a specific little case. A 74-year-old gentleman, happens to be a veteran. He's also a Social Security recipient. His name is Ralph Gilbertson. He lives in Minnesota. And Ralph, you know, Ralph has his own views, and he expresses them on his Facebook. I mean, very mildly. He happens to believe in UFOs. He believes in Bigfoot. And he thinks there's a vast government conspiracy. I don't know how many of my people believe in Bigfoot. How many of you folks out there believe in Bigfoot? I'm sure that many of you believe that there's a government conspiracy, mainly because there is. And many of you may believe in UFOs. I certainly do. I mean, how can you look up at that star-studded sky and even imagine, even stoop to such ethnocentric, self-centered, pious nonsense as to believe we are alone? You know, impossible. Yeah, the planet Earth is the only planet in the whole universe that supports life. Okay, sure. We're so special. We're so special. Anyway, this gentleman had some views, which probably the authorities didn't like. And on top of that, oh, his Social Security check, he had it sent to his daughter in town so that he didn't have to go into the bank and deposit it. And guess what? Police came to his door, and this is just last week, folks, and took all his guns because he's mentally infirm. So, a word of warning to you vets who deal with and get checks from the VA, and to you Social Security recipients or soon-to-be recipients, get your own check. Don't have it sent anywhere else. Be alert for those questions from VA or the Social Security Administration. And remember what the outcome is if you innocently say, yes, my daughter helps me with my check. Okay. It's your government, folks. They're here to help you. I guess Mr. Gilbertson, he must have been wrong about that conspiracy theory, huh? Let's go into the debt, shall we? You'll just love this stuff. So, you remember back there in 2007, we had about $5 trillion, I believe. I have it in my notes. I did a number of shows on it. You can type it in the search bar. And I think it was under mortgage meltdown, subprime, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. I think any of those terms will bring up those shows. And by the way, even though it's blamed on the... And by the way, I did some really in-depth shows on it, talking about how these mortgages were originated and how they were compiled into MBOs, mortgage-backed obligations, and then packaged into SBOs, security-backed obligations, and then sold in credit tranches to banks all over the world. I mean, I went into a lot of detail, and it was all the government. They were trying to buy votes. They wanted $5.5 million. You can go back into the congressional records. I have all that stuff. The government wanted to buy votes by getting 5.5 million people who shouldn't have houses into houses. That's where there were subprime loans. And then those subprime loans were packaged by, you know, this is when Wall Street came in and got greedy and figured out a whole bunch of ways to make money by packaging the loans, then splitting those packages into good credit and bad credit, and then selling those tranches out to everybody. It's pretty fascinating, actually. Pretty fascinating. There's a movie out on it right now. It doesn't go into that detail, but it's called The Big Short, which you might want to see. I hear it's entertaining. I have not seen it myself. Well, you know, besides the fact that we are now seeing the beginnings of new subprime mortgage lending, I'm talking about almost the same crap that was going on in 05, 06, 07 leading up to the mortgage meltdown. I mean, FHA now has a 3% down loan. 3%. I mean, basically, if you can fog a mirror, you can probably qualify for a house loan right now. That just kind of geared up over the last 6 or 8 months, so you're not hearing too much about it, but you're hearing about it here first because you will hear a lot more about it in the future. However, for several years now, there's been subprime auto lending. Subprime auto lending. And it is now $1 trillion. In fact, it may be several, it might be more than $1 trillion. Listen to this. From 2010 to 2014, auto subprime loans, this is like nothing down, higher interest rates, blah, 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 you know, 74 to 84 month terms. I think we've all owned cars, right? And we all know that if you buy a vehicle, that 84 months from now, I mean, we're talking almost 8 years, that car is worth a hell of a lot less. And you've paid an awful lot of payments and an awful lot of interest. And the longer the term, the higher the rate, so the higher the payments. No wonder people are strapped. The falling price of oil has spurred car sales, which has spurred subprime loans. It's all kind of tied in. From 2010 to 2014, 90% of all General Motors car buyers. Remember who owns stock in General Motors, folks? Ah, yes. We do. The government does. Remember the bailout of GM? GM is alive and Osama is dead. Yeah, you remember that whole deal. So from 2010 to 2014, 90% of all GM car buyers financed their purchases. And 83% of those loans were subprime loans. More than half of those were what is called deep subprime loans. Deep subprime are people who don't have a credit rating or people who are currently in bankruptcy. That's how deep the subprime loan. And nothing against those folks. They deserve a car too. But these loans have built up and built up and built up. And these loans were 72 and 84 months, just outrageously long terms, including on used cars. The interest rates on these subprime car loans many times range from 12 to 20%. Now, those of you with good credit who listen to this show, who have bought a car in the last few years, know, you know, somewhere certain financing deals, 0%, 1%, 2%, 3%. The subprime loans, which are the bulk of the market, are 12 to 20% over 8 years. Think about that. It is almost identical, although the loans for cars are smaller than mortgages, to the mortgage nastiness that was going on in the years leading up to the mortgage meltdown in 2008. By last year, 2015, total auto loans outstanding in the United States had reached almost $900 billion. We're talking about $1 trillion, folks. And that is a 25% increase just over 2014 and 2015. This is huge, to use Trump's term. Huge. Do you think this is smart? You think this is going to have a good end? I mean, let me give you some more stats on this because it's unbelievable. There was a report, actually, the Wall Street Journal did a report called Subprime Flashback. And it just came out about a month or so ago. It wasn't talked about at all, of course. There's a bond issue. What they're doing with these subprime loans is what they did with the mortgages. They're collateralizing them into SBOs. And CMOs. And then they're selling these bond funds, these packaged auto loans, they're selling those out into the market, either in tranches from good credit and bad credit, just like the housing, or actually doing funds and getting gullible public investors in these funds that own this automobile financing trash. There's one called Scopus Auto Receivables Trust 2015-2. You can Google it up. That was just 4 months ago that a whole bunch of loans were packaged and sold in this Scopus Auto Receivables Trust 2015-2. As of last month, this is after only 4 months of existence in this bond fund, 12% of the underlying loans were already 30 days past due. 12%. That is huge. Huge. A third of the 12% were more than 60 days past due. Remember, this bond fund just started 4 months ago. And then there was another 2.6% that were written off because their borrowers, this is just in the last 4 months, had already filed for bankruptcy or had the cars repossessed. I mean, that is unbelievable, I think. Fitch Ratings, another outfit. Now, these guys don't do bond funds like the Scopus Group, and heaven help the investors in the bond funds. Heaven help the banks who bought tranches of them. Oh, my God. I mean, it is a repeat of 2007. But Fitch Ratings, which kind of rates all this kind of stuff, they're kind of the Moody's of bonds, if you will. They say, this is just last month, by the way, in February. They say that the 60-day plus delinquency rate on the subprime auto loans securitized in the last 5 years. In other words, the loan was taken out and then they were packaged into these securities, sold out like poison pills to who knows who. Securitized in the last 5 years hit 5.16% in February alone. This is the highest level of defaults of 60-day past due auto loans in 20 years. 20 years. The total amount of low-quality auto lending has now surpassed the last peak, which was 2006. And total auto lending is now well in excess of $1 trillion. Remember, the subprime is $900 billion. Subprime lending, by the way, makes up now 40% of all auto loans on the books. 40%. And by the way, you know, the car makers don't care. Couldn't care less. In fact, they are increasing the rate at which they are doing subprime lending. Wow. This is going to have such a good ending. Such a good ending. Yeah, Experian Automotive, they are another reporting firm. They compile data on car finance businesses, you know, or finance-related businesses. The biggest areas of loan growth in the fourth quarter of 2015 came from the riskiest part of the subprime market. Remember I was talking about the deep subprime? Yeah. All right. So, and that is the fastest part of a very fast-growing auto loan market. So, you know, this is obviously a train off the trestles.